Hi there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with the judge executive of Round County, Harry Clark. Harry, thanks so much for being here.
Well, good morning, Leanne, and thanks very much for having us here.
We are talking a little bit about the meeting of the fiscal court that happened earlier this week, but before we get into the agenda, I just wanted to touch base with you. Obviously, we're by the time this airs, we'll be hitting our third round of bad winter weather. There's a lot of things that are up in the air right now. I feel like you're spinning several plates up there. With the power outages, there have been, a little over 1,000 people at a time without power throughout the county, which isn't as bad as some of our neighboring counties, but still a lot of things are happening. A lot of people are being impacted. Even us here at WMKY not being able to be broadcasting because we're out of power. When emergencies like this happen, what goes into effect over in your office? How are you handling things as these weather emergencies specifically come down?
Well, again, the first thing we do is assess it and see if it really requires and if we can benefit from a declaration of an emergency. And so we assess this, and Jimmy Hampton, our emergency management director, and myself, we discuss this along with the magistrates and all the folks. Everybody has an input to this. I don't do it solely on my own. And we determined that a declaration of emergency would certainly benefit us. And we've had two back-to-back storms. We didn't get recovered from the first, and we had the second one. And on top of that, we're coupled with the COVID. So, you know, even if we open up a shelter or a center or whatever you want to call it, we still have to maintain the protocol of COVID. We don't want to let our guard down on that. So this is kind of it's a difficult time to juggle both emergencies at the same time, because you're just kind of inviting a different settings that you normally try to avoid at all costs, which is congregate settings and a large number of folks together. But there's a lot of wheels that spin here in this office. I have a wonderful staff throughout the judge executive employees. They all step up, volunteer, do everything that we need to do. And once the emergency declaration is made, then, of course, I've got to have staff to assist me with all the other things that we do. And this particular time, we had the ice storm, which took out, at one time, I think we had about 5,000 at peak without power. They whittled that down to the day before the second round. I think we had it down to about 400 power outages, roughly. And then we got hit by the second round, and that took us back up to roughly 2,500. Without power. So they've been whittling away on that again in preparation for the third round, I guess, of storms coming. And as of just a few minutes ago, there were 1,700 individuals in Round County without power. That's a large number, but it's probably nowhere in comparison to some of our neighboring counties that's also got hit with the same storm. And just for folks to know, we actually have six power companies supplying power into Round County, which, that's kind of hard to believe. But we do. We have six. Some of them just handle a very few customers. For example, Licking Valley RECC only has seven customers in Round County. And none of those are without power. So that's a good thing. Kentucky Utilities has 5,236 customers in Round County, and they have zero outages. Kentucky Power, 1,102 customers with 149 outages. Grayson RECC has 1,722, and they have 1,537 of those out. So at Fleming Mason, holds 2,729, none of those are out. Clark Energy, 488 customers with only 14 out. And I just wanted to throw that out so people would understand what we're trying to juggle here with six different power companies and trying to get all these things coordinated and put together. So it's very difficult. I've got great people. Hats off to the folks, the electrical contractors coming in and assisting. Of course, the fire department, road crews are out cutting. They're blazing the trail for everybody to get in and out to do their work, ambulances, fire trucks. So it's just been a big effort, but we're really, you know, it just shows you what we are when we need to come together as a community, what we're really all about, and we're all about each other.
Mm-hmm. I've been paying attention to everything that's happening, and of course, I get emails from all the different electric cooperatives, and because I'm part of the media, so I kind of try to pass the information on. And we have our websites up, and I'm constantly updating that with the most up-to-date information. But I'm sure that you're getting a lot of traffic of people wanting to know, hey, what's going on? When am I getting my power back? And really, like, you're updating your social media pages pretty frequently to make sure people know what's happening too.
Yeah, and you know, social media is a wonderful tool. And you know, I know it gets abused for a lot of things, but it is an absolute wonderful tool that we can get a message out pretty doggone quick to folks, and they pay attention. You know, I think right now we're pretty close. We're approaching 6,000 followers on the Fiscal Court Facebook page. Which is, you know, you can reach out and touch 6,000 folks and they touch the other group. It's really an amazing tool. And that's how I like to use it, as a tool.
During the first ice storm that came through when the power outages first began, you did declare a state of emergency for the county. And during the fiscal court meeting, that was a discussion that needed to happen because things in Frankfort trickle down. So tell me a little bit about why that state of emergency had to be addressed during the fiscal court meeting.
Well, you know, the big buzz and has been for some time since COVID is to restrict the governor's powers and limited his days of power with the executive authority during an emergency. So they wanted to limit his powers to 30 days. And then if it exceeded the 30 days, then they would need to call in the legislators to determine what's the next move. So, you know, everything trickles down. So when they took the governor's powers away, so did they take the judge executive's powers. So we're actually limited to 30 days of power as well. It's not really a big deal to us because we normally have a fiscal court meeting every 30 days. And the magistrates have the authority to bring themselves into the table. If the judge goes rogue on them, they can call themselves into session and rein him in. So it's not really a big deal to us, but we have to at least follow the guidelines and the rules. So, you know, I declared this emergency on the 12th, and it will exceed 30 days before the next fiscal court. So what I asked the fiscal court to do, to allow this emergency declaration to continue until it is resolved and or until the fiscal court determines they want to rescind my authority, and then we will figure out where we go from there. So they readily agreed to it. And like I said, they know the rules. It's very difficult. It would be difficult for the governor, but it's not so hard for the counties. And, you know, my declaration has nothing to do with a power trip, because to be quite honest with you, the magistrates are very tuned into what I'm doing every day. They know exactly what I'm doing, but it allows me to reach out and do things that I normally can't do as far as requisition of items, property. You know, if I had to, I could hire contractors without going through the fiscal court. I'm working hard right now trying to get some salt. You know, and that gives me the authority to purchase salt without going through the normal channels of fiscal court and those kind of things. And that's what it gives you the authority to do. So it's nothing like a big power trip that we're going to, you know, hire 50 people full time at $100,000 a year during this emergency.
Now, speaking of salt, I know that there was a brief discussion that we've got enough for now, but it's definitely a concern and on the radar of you and the magistrates. For what's happening with our salt supply?
Our salt supply, we actually started the winter with more salt than we had ever had before. We started out with 1,150 ton, and we normally start out with a bin full of about 700 ton in the salt bin. But we started out with more than we ever had, but because of the conditions, we've used more than we ever had. So we really are sparing on our salt right now. People will notice that on the roads. We are salting, as of this last storm, we're going to salt hills, approaches, curves, shaded areas, and try to get the roads in condition. But we just don't have enough salt to sit on the road and to continue. And this is just not a county, Round County problem. This is a problem with all of the counties as well as the state. And I think the state's been pulling theirs out of their emergency reserve. And we don't have emergency reserve. Our emergency reserve with the state And I've already put the request into the state for additional to get some of their salt. However, they're running low on salt as well. So we're working very hard to try to get more salt in. But to be honest with you, in these temperatures, the salt won't work on the roads anyway. The only thing you can do is the truck goes past your house. It makes you feel good to think they're out there doing something. They are. They're blading. They're cutting trees. All of our efforts went in yesterday to clear trees to allow emergency vehicles to get in if needed be. And so we cut trees out of the roads, cut trees, started about 2 o'clock. Well, they've been at it since actually the very beginning of the storm, the first storm, and they haven't stopped. Trees continue to fall, and they're still working on those. People are going to have to be patient with the roads.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
Support for MSPR comes from Moorhead Primary Care at 333 Beacon Hill Road. Moorhead Primary Care welcomes physicians assistants Kevin Cummins and Alicia Perry, accepting new patients with a focus to build patient and provider relationships for acute and chronic illnesses. Moorhead Primary Care remains committed to the health of our community during this COVID-19 crisis. Office appointments and telehealth available at 606-780-0444. That's 606-780-0444. Or visit the website at moorheadprimarycare.com.
And we're back here on Open Mic here at Moorhead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Harry Clark, the judge executive here in Rowan County. Harry, thanks again for being here.
Thank you very much for having us.
We wanted to talk a little bit about the fiscal court meeting that happened earlier this week. Amongst the snow and ice, the group was able to meet via Zoom, even though, I mean, that's something we've been doing quite a bit. Everybody's been meeting via Zoom for the past year, but you were one of the only people in the courthouse since there was so much bad roads to travel on. Most people were not in. But the group had a lot to discuss. First of all, I wanted to touch base about the emergency medical services report. There's a lot going on with them, obviously, with bad weather conditions, and that's something to be concerned. But everything seems to be running pretty swimmingly there.
You know, in spite of the storm, we're still on course. We still govern this county. We take care of the citizens. The fiscal court meeting yesterday was just an example of it. We have to conduct business. And so we went ahead and had the meeting via Zoom. I came in, opened the front door just in case, to keep things legal. So if someone wanted to walk in and make a comment, they certainly could. I had one magistrate that had to travel in and be with me in the office. That was Charlie Winkleman, District 3 magistrate, because he had no power, no internet service. So he came in, didn't have to. We would have had a quorum without Charlie Winkleman, but he is dedicated and he wanted to come in and be a part of that meeting. And he came in. And so we had a good meeting yesterday and covered a lot of areas and took care of the county's business.
How are things going, I guess, with the new EMS building? The last time we talked, there was, I know that's not really a high priority right now with the weather being so bad. There's probably not a whole lot happening out there. But the last time we talked, things had started to slow down a little bit, but we're pushing to get things done on time.
Well, just, on EMS briefing, we still got ambulances. We've got a couple out for repair, but we're in good shape on ambulance-wise. Our crews are healthy. They're eager and ready and dedicated to go to work. So we're in good shape on the ambulance service. The new building that's being constructed, it's inside of a warehouse, so really not a lot of weather excuses. But it has been coming along very slow. The remodeling of the other, the existing office complex that we're going to put administrative staff in is coming along very well. I expect that to be done by the end of the month. And the building of the other ambulance service, the new one, is on contract to be completed. We gave them a 120-day extension, but they are on contract again now to be completed by March 20th. And we certainly hope that they fulfill that contract.
Now, the jailer wasn't able to make it to the meeting, but there was a report. Things are still going well at the jail. And surprisingly, unlike most other facilities like county jails and prisons throughout the country, we haven't seen a COVID outbreak here at the Rowan County Jail.
We haven't, you know, and they and that's hats off to the staff and Jailer West Cold Iron. They run a pretty tight ship there, obviously, because we've had no outbreaks of COVID. They had about 277 inmates yesterday. That's down from when we initially started with COVID with 347 inmates. It is costing the county money to maintain and to operate the facility. When it was at 340 inmates, we didn't make any money, but it was enough to revenue that it was kind of almost a revenue neutral, but not quite. But yes, I gave the report for West Cold Iron yesterday of 277 inmates, no COVID. And the jailer and I have a very good working relationship. So really no surprises. We talk quite often when we need to. And so we're glad that we have that partnership, and we're glad that things are running as smooth as it can there.
That was only 7 degrees when I got up this morning to get ready and come into work. So it's kind of hard to think about being outside for recreation, but the fiscal court did have a presentation about the Moorhead Rowan bike and pedestrian plan moving forward. And was anything decided about that, or was it just a discussion?
It was a presentation to get not necessarily anything legal, but just to get kind of what I would call a head nod that we're okay with them moving forward with their plans. And it will be a required 80% paid for through grants, 20% matching from the city county. And the mayor and I and city council and fiscal court work very well together. So we think we can come up with a 20% match between the two government entities. And so we gave them the head nod. They had presented us to city council, and it's really a great program. It would really help us out. And I mentioned yesterday in court, this also will help us with our strategic plan that we set in motion here a few months back. This will help us with the health wellness program that's certainly highlighted in the plan, as well as tourism. So this will be a double banger for us, and it's a good idea, and the fiscal court was eager to go move forward with it. So they'll start working on those grants, and we'll figure it out how to match the money when it comes.
The group also discussed the ordinance restructuring the Arts Promotion Foundation. Things are about to change in that whole setup throughout the county.
It is. And, we've operated for years with a board, a director board of six. That board of six was responsible when it was designed, was responsible for the fundraising, the upkeep, the director, all of those things that goes into running the art center. But we contracted with the tourism, which made sense to us, to oversee the operation of the art center. It kind of went hand in hand with tourism. And so we really didn't need the full board, and it kind of had outlived its usefulness, if you will, as far as being a board. So we changed that into a committee. It'll be a committee oversight of that. And that will be a tourism director, the art center director, and one individual appointed by myself or the county judge, whoever happens to be in the seat at the time. So that will be, it's actually a foundation, and then they'll have committees to do things that they need to do within that area.
I'm taking a look at something that's going to impact a lot more people within the county. The Community Develop Block Grant Resolution for Public Utility Assistance was discussed. I know that's part of the CARES Act funding, but how is that going to affect our residents here?
Well, it's through CARES Act funding, and it's the city can reach out for up to $200,000, and so can the county. So we both have applied for that. The mayor and myself have applied for those, and it will be an avenue for folks that need help with assistance with utilities. It will be an avenue for them to help get them funding through the utilities. The utility folks will be working and sending out letters and doing those kind of things, as long as with the Gateway ad is the one that is the holder of this, as well as the Gateway Community Action, and they're all three partnering in this, and they're going to help with some utilities for some folks that need it.
And the road department is going to get some new equipment, I see. Are we getting, I'm going to assume that we're looking further ahead than trying to buy a new plow.
Well, we actually are. And, you know, the road department does a great job, and they work hard and they need the tools to work with. A lot of our stuff is getting old. It's getting worn out. We spend more money on maintenance and time broke down. So the court decided that we would buy a new mowing tractor with a mower, a couple new trailers to haul the equipment on. Probably the big thing, the exciting thing, I guess, probably to the road department will be the new skid steer. We've never had one of those before. And so we're looking forward to that. It's very versatile. It'll be a lot lighter, easier to move around the county when we have floods and other things. So we're looking forward to that. They're looking forward to it. And, you know, if we want them to do the job, then we need to give them the tools. And the fiscal court was certainly very agreeable to that.
Now, I missed this part of the meeting, but I know it's something that a lot of the people within my social circle are concerned about. There was a discussion for action on repeat animal control calls. Tell me a little bit about why that was an issue in the first place.
Well, occasionally we'll send the dog warden or animal control officer out to a area, to a house, and they'll, let's just say they got a dog running at large or whatever, goats eating shrubs or wild pigs in their backyard that gets out. So we send them out, and they talk to the residents and whoever the owner is and try to get them to contain it and, you know, with a verbal, and then they'll go back with a warning. And currently the only thing we can do is just keep warning them. So what we want to do is, if we make numerous trips out, we want to be able to put a little teeth in that and progressively increase the fine if we continue to go out to the same place, same resident, for the same problem. And it doesn't happen that often, Leanne, but when it does, it gets really to be. I know one particular case, I've had the dog warden out to one particular place about six times, and they just kind of ignore it. So when we start finding them, I think getting in their pocket, I think they'll pay a little bit more attention.
Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of people who are animal activists, I guess is what I would call them. People who feel very strongly about the way animals are treated within the universe, but you know, as far as being really vocal about it. And sometimes you see things. I took a little walk in the snow and there was a dog tied up in a yard, and I was like, oh, he's cold, puppy cold. But you know, there's nothing that a community can really do about things like that.
Right. And we work, you know, STARS works very hard, and our animal control officer works very hard. Sometimes I know they take straw out and put bedding in dog houses and do those kind of things. And, it concerns me when people don't take care of their animals. They should. It worries me how they take care of their kids if they don't take care of their animals. But their laws are very restrictive on what we can and we can't do. And so we have to follow the law.
And unfortunately, we're out of time here on Open Mic. Rowan County Judge Executive Harry Clark, I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you very much, Leanne, and to everyone that's listening. Please just be patient. We're working as hard as we can. The power companies is working as hard as they can. This is a maximum effort on everybody's part to get things back as normal as we can. Please don't forget COVID. It is there. It is alive and well. And so pay attention to the safeguards from COVID. Be patient and check on your neighbors. Make sure they're okay. And thank you all very much.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Moorhead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.